Welcome to episode 357 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm your host and producer, Josh Pollard.
And I'm your host, Richard Gunther. And this is a show where we talk about Microsoft Entertainment technology, including audio, video, gaming, and more across all Windows platforms.
So Richard, to you and to all of our listeners, I say Happy New Year.
Thank you. Is that the right language to say that in?
Lots of Chinese people speak English, so I'm going to go with yes.
Oh, nice. That was good save.
And China is not the only country that celebrates the Lunar New Year, so I would have to say it in a bunch of different languages.
And that would take a long time.
Yeah. And that's not the only thing I want to say before we get started, because I want to apologize for a couple of things to all of our lovely, devoted listeners who were probably very disappointed at it, at the best case, disappointed, maybe worst, bitterly angry with us. First off, apologies for no show last week. Last week turned into a week of insanity and it just didn't happen. We had a really cool show planned for you and we teased it the week before. It's still going to happen. It just couldn't happen last week. It's all my fault and I apologize for that. And then I also want to apologize for episode 356. I am the producer of this fine podcast here, and I messed up when doing the recording and left a whole bunch of pauses in by mistake. I skipped a step at the end and just completely forgot to do it in my processing. So apologies for that also. Hopefully you'll forgive us. I suppose if you're listening to this, you've probably already forgiven us though.
Phew, you didn't unsubscribe. That's a good thing.
Right. So why don't we jump right into this? Let's move past. It is a new year, so let's sweep all of that stuff away and move on to the feedback this week. These were all sent in to us at our email inbox, which you can find at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com.
Our first message is from James. And James says, "Hi, Josh and Richard. I was listening to the last Entertainment 2.0 podcast, number 356, during which Richard was eulogizing over the Plex documentation and CPU benchmarks." Eulogizing. I don't know if I would have used that word, but okay.
Yeah, it didn't die.
When it reminded me of an email message that I sent you guys last May. I was in a similar situation trying to work out what machine to buy to run Plex, and in the end settled on the machine I did because it was cheap, but it had a high enough CPU to comfortably deal with my Plex needs. I also looked at getting a small form factor machine that was low energy consumption. But when I worked out the actual cost of the difference in energy consumption between the machine I bought and the energy efficient machine, I realized I could have the machine I bought turned on before the energy efficient machine made a difference in terms of cost. So if Richard already owns his Mac Pro, this is likely to be even longer. That being said, I know that Richard likes buying shiny new toys, so this may be a moot point. Yeah, that's an interesting point there. But, you know, I am thinking that I'm just going to stick with that old machine and see how that goes. I have not had a chance to set that up yet. Talk a little bit more about that stuff later. He says, "Right now, I run my Plex server in a Hyper-V instance under Windows 10, as this gives me portability across systems at a later date. The CPU on the Plex VM sits at 20% for the majority of the time, and I've never had a problem. Plex is great when you have enough CPU to run it." A very, very good point, and that's one of the things that I learned in my research. And thanks for telling us about that. I had forgotten about that message, Josh.
Yeah, I'd completely forgotten about that message too. And it's kind of easy to forget because we get so many messages about Plex. It seems like we get way more messages about Plex now than we do about Media Center, that's for sure.
Than anything else, I think.
Yeah, that's true. So thank you to James for sending in that information. Good to know. And Richard, I think you should just go with the Mac Pro also because you've already got it. So why not? Doesn't cost you anything.
That's what I'm thinking.
So let's move on to a message from PJ. He says, "I'm in the market for my next Surface. I have a Surface Pro now, the original one, and I wanted your feedback." He says his price point is $700, but he can spend more. He said there are multiple deals for the Surface Pro 4 right now. There's a Surface Pro 4 with a Core M, 128 gig drive, 4 gigs of RAM for $699, or the Surface Pro 4 with the i5, 128 gigs of storage and 4 gigs of RAM for $799. His use case, he says he primarily will be using it as a consumption device. He says, I like the Surface Pro 4 Core M because of the fanless design. I would much prefer a Core M Surface 4, as in not a Surface Pro 4, with a Core M and LTE, but it's not available. It's not available because it doesn't exist yet, which is really what he's saying here. There's the Surface 3, of course, that they released last spring, and that does come with LTE and stuff like that, or at least you can get it with LTE. And then in the fall, of course, they released the Surface Pro 4 with all of these different models. I would recommend a PJ. My thought would be, if you can wait a couple months, see if they do announce a Surface 4 with a Core M processor. It seems fairly likely, and just get that. Or maybe still consider a Surface 3 with LTE. You might be able to get a decent deal on those, and it's really more of what you want anyway. LTE is one of those things where it's not like we haven't seen them ever integrate that sort of thing into the Pro line and into laptop sort of devices. It's just not very common. So if that's something you really want, then I would definitely be looking at the current Surface 3 or waiting around for the Surface 4. The only problem with that is if you are really looking for LTE, the LTE model of the Surface 3 didn't launch at the same time as the non-LTE one. It was a few months delayed. So I guess it depends on how long you want to wait. But that's what I'm thinking on this. Richard, do you have any other thoughts?
Are you really asking me for my opinions on which Surface to buy? Come on. How well-versed do you think I am in this?
Well, I thought you might have... You've got lots of tablets. I thought you might have something to interject there.
No, I really don't. I have to admit, on the Windows front, my tablet selection criteria is cheap, cheap, cheap. That's really all I care about because I just use them as testing devices. I'm not trying to get something that I'm going to use as a daily carrier.
Okay, that makes sense. So let us know what you've decided, PJ. We're curious.
All right, our next and final message this week is from Kevin. And this is a little bit long. There are a couple points in here. I've already responded to Kevin, but I think there's some good information here. So he says, thank you for your podcast. I'm a longtime whole house Windows Media Center user with Seton Infinity V4 PCIe and an Infinity V6 ETH using cable card. I'm also a longtime IPAC. Remember that name?
Yeah, I had one of those.
I did too. Windows Mobile, Windows Phone user, and have absolutely no problems or plans to stop using Windows Media Center nor Windows Phone as long as they work, unless something better comes along. So far, I don't see anything better. That's my opinion. He says, did you see or hear Paul Thurrott's comments on Windows Weekly 451 about Windows Media Center, Apple TV, and inferring Microsoft missing out on an opportunity? He mentioned a few times throughout the show, but especially starting at around 127, and talked about it for a couple minutes. I want to stop here because I found this fascinating. Usually when Paul talks about Windows Media Center, it's kind of with a dismissal attitude, like, yeah, it's not there anymore. We just have to deal with it. And this was a very different situation. In this case, Leo, about mid-salad, asked Paul, well, but what if you want to make your PC and a home theater PC? Then what are you going to do? Like, what do you put on it these days? And they were positing that maybe you put Linux on it. Or at least that's what Leo was suggesting. And they started talking about how, yeah, it's a shame that there isn't, like, I don't know, some sort of media center that worked in Windows that pulled together all these different services that you could use to watch your media. And it was kind of a fun discussion. And I think the missed opportunity point there is that here you have this platform, a really good platform that was out probably well before its time. And by the time, you know, with all the trouble with cable card and everything else, by the time we got to a point where we're actually seeing devices specifically built to deliver apps to stream content, it was too late for this platform, or at least so Microsoft thought. And how sad is that?
Yeah, I think that's where the phrase missed out on an opportunity isn't perhaps the best phrase for the situation. They, as they frequently are, were just too early, which I know sounds crazy. A lot of people are like, no, Microsoft's always late to the game. Well, no, not really. I was using a Windows tablet PC in 2003.
Well, you're crazy because that was just a terrible experience.
Well, it was a terrible experience because they were too early.
Yeah.
And it's kind of the same case with Windows Media Center. It was phenomenal, still is. But it was solving a problem. And I mean, it was kind of the right time because it was useful at the time. Cable boxes were really, really horrible back then. They're way better now than what they were in 2005. But it had so much potential that absolutely would be perfect for it, for the situation that we're in now. But because of cable card and because of all of the different directions that Microsoft has gone since then, it's not that it missed the opportunity. It was just here and gone before it even really got to this time frame where it would have really made sense in terms of the rest of the ecosystem.
It existed long before. It was a platform for streaming applications long before there was really such a thing as an ecosystem of streaming applications.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, think back to, now I'm blanking on the name of it because it's been so long. But I remember there being that amazing plugin for watching the Olympics back in 08 or whatever year that was. So long ago. Yeah.
Yeah.
All long before like Roku existed.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yep.
All right. Well, thanks for that opportunity to reminisce a little bit and maybe opine a little bit there, Kevin. Now, he says, now my question. He said, in episode 356 of Entertainment 2.0, Richard, you mentioned having Ubiquiti in your home and visiting CES and finding a newer and better version of the product and buying it, but you didn't include the information for that device in the show notes. He says, I have Comcast Wi-Fi in my home. Really, you don't have to say any more than that. We get it. We understand. I'm sorry. I'm just kidding. He says, with the Comcast router Wi-Fi box, and the Wi-Fi is horrible. He says, admittedly, there may be interference in my neighborhood, power lines and such, but the Wi-Fi is very inconsistent. It's weak and it's intermittent, but the wired Ethernet connection is fast and solid. He says, I was wondering after listening if you could if I could connect my own better Wi-Fi equipment to my existing router. And so the answer to this question is yes, absolutely you can. Yes, if I can explain a little bit further about how I have the house set up and what I'm using. So I'll just summarize that here. I have Ubiquiti Networks Unify AP, stands for Access Point, Enterprise Wi-Fi system. It is a three-piece hub system. And hub is the wrong word because they're really more like the Wi-Fi disks or squares that you see attached to ceilings in hotels and offices and stuff like that. They don't have visible antennas. They just look like a round disk emanating a little bit of a light from the center. And this allows you to put three points in your home wherever you need them so that you can get the signal to where you want it to be. And with the software that they provide, it blends it all together to look like and operate as one network, even though it's over three separate access points. So I've found it really useful. They run on power over Ethernet, which makes installation really easy. You just connect them to a PoE power over Ethernet switch, and they sell one of those. It's called a tough switch. And then you just tack them onto your ceiling or on your wall, wherever you want to have these things. For me, it's been really, really good. Now, I know if you listen to Home Server Show, Dave McCabe has the system, and he's had some problems with it. And where I've had problems primarily has been in the overall range in some areas of my home. And that's because I have a long, sprawling one-level home. And so even with the three access points, I had some problems. And so at CES, they announced this new product, which is a long-range antenna, and it includes AC. So now, in addition to the other flavors of Wi-Fi that I have, my devices that can connect over 802.11ac, which is significantly faster, can benefit from that new capability. So it adds range, it adds AC, and it's half the price of what these equivalent devices cost before. So I bought one, I installed it, and it's been rock solid. I love it. I stand by these things. I think they're great. The one caveat is to use the advanced features like blending the network together as one, creating a guest network with some access control and any sort of parental or timing controls. You have to run a service on your computer that's always on. So there needs to be something that's operating as a controller, because it doesn't come with a switch controller type thing, and it doesn't have that kind of like router software built into the devices themselves like you might see on a switch that you would buy. So generally, that's my experience with it. I'm very, very happy with it. And this time, for reals, we'll put links in the show notes about these products.
All right. So that's it for our feedback this week. Let's move on to our topics of the week. And hey, Windows Media Center making another appearance this episode.
Wait, what?
Yep. Unfortunately, not in a good way.
Oh, well, we've come to expect that.
Right. Yeah. Unfortunately, that tends to be the norm these days. Yeah. It sounds like, I wouldn't know from personal experience, but guide data just went missing for close to a week in the UK. Now, fortunately, it's back, but a whole lot of upset people in the UK if they were using Windows Media Center, because it sounds like it stopped working last Tuesday and didn't come back until the following Monday. So that's a whole lot of missed recordings for some people, of course.
Wow.
Yeah. And absolutely nothing from Microsoft on this. No apologies, no information on what happened.
But that's so unusual.
Yeah. What can we say about guy data problems at this point that we haven't already said a million times over?
They'll get resolved at the last possible minute. Sometimes not even in time for that.
Yeah, it used to be that they would at least get resolved at the last minute, but over the last year, nope, they've been missing those dates too. So, and it's always been worse in the UK. They always have more guy data issues than us. So,
I don't know why that is.
I don't know. I'm not sure, but I mean, they always, and by that, I mean, our UK listeners tend to just say that, well, Microsoft is a US focused company and they spend the majority of their effort on US based things. Okay. You know, enlightened one in the chat asked, was the Xbox One guide data affected in the UK? I don't know. That's a fantastic question.
That's a very good question.
Yeah. You know, I know that when Microsoft was switching over Windows Media Center to use the Rovi guide data as its source for Media Center, just like the Xbox One, that they rolled that out kind of slowly across the globe. But I'm pretty sure at this point that the UK is using the same guide data source as the Xbox One. I don't know. I don't remember for certain, but I thought that rollout wasn't supposed to take super long. So they probably are. My guess is that if it was messed up on the Xbox One, people wouldn't have made such a big deal about it because there's no DVR there yet. Now, I mean, it would be an inconvenience to not have guide data on an Xbox One, but you're not going to miss any recordings because you can't record anything on your Xbox One yet. So I'm not sure. We'll have a link to this, to the thread over at the green button in the show notes, of course. So maybe there's some more information there. I did not go through and read this whole thing because it was 20 pages long at a forum post. So, but maybe there is something in there about some Xbox One guide data. That would be very, very interesting.
Hey, I have a really good idea. Maybe Microsoft could buy the greenbutton.tv so that they have a place to tell people about stuff like this.
You know, that really sounds like a great idea.
But then they'd probably just shut it down.
Well, you know, I think first they would change it over to a different site called like an experts community.
Right. Maybe give it a name that nobody will remember.
Right. And make it kind of hard to find and sort through and wipe out a bunch of the old data. And then they would probably kill it. So maybe they shouldn't do that.
I think maybe we sound a little bit too negative this week. It's another one of those weeks, right?
Oh, we haven't even gotten to one of the segments later in the show. Oh, boy. Yeah, it's maybe not going to be the happiest show. There will be some good things. There are some things I'm excited about to talk about tonight. This next one probably isn't one of them, though. If you're still rocking Windows 7 Media Center, or probably Windows 8.1 at this point too, Microsoft has now changed to make the upgrade to Windows 10 a recommended Windows update. Now, what does that mean? Does it mean that, OMG, your Windows Media Center PC is, you're going to come downstairs tomorrow morning and it's going to have Windows 10 on it? No. But there are some things to know about. If it's a recommended update and your machine is set up to get recommended updates, it's definitely going to be downloading Windows 10. And if you have data caps and things like that, then that's maybe an issue because Windows 10 is like a 4 gig download or something like that. So you might want to look into that. And if you've got other people that maybe just casually click OK on pop-ups and stuff on your home theater PC, then you know, they could inadvertently, without you really knowing or without them really paying attention, install Windows 10. And that might be bad because you can roll back theoretically, but what if it doesn't work? Then you're in some trouble. So you might want to look into this and maybe disable doing automatic recommended updates, or look at, I mean, there's been lots of posts at sites like the Green Button and other sites like that that have talked about ways of finding the Windows 10 Windows update and making it so that it never comes back to your PC. Now, maybe never is too strong of a word because I'm sure Microsoft can find a way. But there are ways to more solidly protect your Windows Media Center's PCs from getting upgraded. But if you're really worried, you might want to look into this. Now, me, I'm pretty sure my box is still set at recommended updates. And I'm not super concerned, but it's something to be aware of at the very least.
Yeah, it's interesting. I have not seen this in there, but I am getting that annoying blue pop-up all the time because I never turned that thing off and I should probably go do that now.
Yeah, might not be a bad idea. I don't think you're going to be putting yourself at too much risk because I think the security updates are always marked as critical. So you're probably not at very much risk by not taking recommended updates. In fact, you might be better off because they could release a Windows update that could mess things up. You know, that's a possibility too, especially with the current state of Windows Media Center and how it's obviously not a concern at Microsoft right anymore. And maybe wouldn't get tested in a bug fix of other things. So I don't know. Normally I like to say, turn on automatic updates and just do them because usually bad things don't happen and you're keeping yourself more secure. But at this point in the game, maybe not so much. All right. So let's move on to Richard's favorite section of the show, the part where we talk about video games.
Absolutely my favorite. I get to refresh my drink, go take a walk. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, this first story might be of at least a little bit of interest to you. We're not the only ones who are excited about the Lunar New Year, commonly referred to as Chinese New Year. And Microsoft is too, and so they commissioned a bunch of mostly Chinese designers to design some Lunar New Year themed Xbox One consoles. And some of these are pretty cool looking. I don't know if, Richard, if you got to take a look at some of these. We, of course, will have the link in the show notes for you all to take a look at these pictures. Some of these are pretty cool looking. Some of these, not as impressive. But, you know, the very last one in the post, I think is the most interesting one, was designed by someone from Beijing, and it's themed after the Forbidden City. It's really, really cool looking. Now, they're cool to look at, but I don't think you're ever going to be able to, like, buy one of these or anything like that.
Right, right, right. So, this is not the situation that we normally have where they come out every once in a while with five new custom consoles.
Right. No, you're not going to be able to get your hands on these, but they're at least neat to look at. So,
absolutely. Yeah. I think my favorite is the candy box.
The candy box, the red one.
Yeah.
The Monkey Mountain.
Partly because it's red.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm not a big fan of red, and not a big fan of that color of gold either. So I didn't really like that one as much, but yeah, cool. All right, so on to some actual gaming news. It's another week, so more deals with gold this week. Probably the most interesting games in the sale, although there's a big list of them, so definitely check them out. Mortal Kombat X is down to $27.50. That version, I don't think, comes with the DLC, and I think there's been a lot of DLC released for Mortal Kombat since it originally came out. But I know a lot of people do really like that game if you're into fighting games. So definitely one to check out at only $27. Also, NBA 2K16, if you're into the basketballs, might want to check that out. It's on sale. It's not as big of a sale. It's $40. But you know, if you don't have it yet and you love basketball, then not a bad time to get it. And then an interesting indie title, Lovers in a Dangerous Space Time. One of my favorite titles for a video game in a long time. I think it's such a great name. I haven't picked this one up myself yet, but I kind of want to because it sounds really fun and a fun co-op experience. That's down to $10. So go and check those out if you've got an Xbox One. And, you know, I'm not actually sure how many of the Xbox 360 titles are backwards compatible. There are some good and interesting offers in there. I'm just not sure that any of them are backwards compatible, and I wish they would tell you that on this page, but they're not doing that yet, which is unfortunate. So hopefully they'll start to do that. Speaking of backwards compatibility, there was a little bit of excitement and then disappointment this weekend around backwards compatibility. The biggest game that everyone, well, not everyone, but most people want to have backwards compatible from the 360 to the Xbox One is a game called Red Dead Redemption. Incredibly popular game made by the same guys that make the Grand Theft Auto games, but it's a Western. I'm really just saying this for your benefit, Richard, because everybody else who cares about gaming knows what Red Dead Redemption is. But it's at the top of the list for games that people want on backwards compatibility. Well, I think it was Saturday. Some people discovered they could get it to install, that it was, if you had the disc for the game, or no, maybe it was the other way around. If you had bought the game digitally, there was a way to get it to install on your Xbox One because it had shown up in the store. And so everyone said, yay, they haven't announced it, but Red Dead Redemption is available. And then the next day it stopped working. Microsoft released a patch to the game that made it that you actually couldn't download or something like that. I'm not as familiar with it because I'm one of the few people who doesn't actually want to play Red Dead Redemption, but basically disabled it so that if you had been able to install it prior to them discovering this, you wouldn't be able to play it anyway. And
wow.
Then of course made it so that no one else would be able to install it right now and said, yes, it did show up in the store. Some other games did too, by the way. And you shouldn't take that as a hint of what's coming next. Instead, it's really just us testing games. We're trying to test everything, basically. And these few games accidentally got pushed through when they shouldn't have. So We've fixed the glitch and look for future announcements on Xbox One backwards compatible games.
Huh. Weird.
Yeah. So one last thing to talk about on the gaming front. There's, you know, we had talked, well, frankly, I think it was the last episode that we had discussed that the beta for The Division was going to be happening right after we had recorded the last episode. I'll talk more about that later, but that was a closed beta. It was only open to people who had pre-ordered the game or had signed up on a waiting list and then actually got access to it, which not everyone did. And it was awesome. And then it was over. So we were basically left waiting until the game's release date of March 8th. But today, Ubisoft announced that they're going to be doing an open beta for The Division. And just like the previous beta, Xbox One owners get to play it a day earlier than everybody else. So nice. If you've got an Xbox One, starting on February 18th, you'll be able to start playing, and that beta will be open through February 21st. You'll be able to preload the beta game starting on the 16th because it's kind of big. It's like a 27 gig install. So if you got slow internet, definitely jump on this as soon as possible. I mean, when the last beta opened up, I had a friend who got in but didn't go to install it until the first night that it was available, and it took him like 5 hours to install it, and he didn't get to play that night. So preload this if you're interested, and if you're into cover-based shooters and RPGs and stuff like that, check this out. It's really, really good. Cool. If you did play the previous beta, one thing you'll want to know is that any progress that you had made in that beta, it's all gone. You're starting over. These are betas. That's how it typically works.
Yeah, I would expect that. Even I kind of know that.
Another important thing to know is that it's not going to be exactly like the previous beta. They're going to add another main mission to the beta. So there's going to be a little bit more to do. And then also, if you played the previous beta and have not uninstalled it, don't uninstall it, because it'll just be released as an update to that previous beta. So you're probably not going to have 27 gigs to download over again. It'll be a smaller update for you, fortunately. So if you're wondering what I'm doing February 18th through the 21st, this is it. Start up your Xbox and look for me. That's where I will be.
All right. So that's it for gaming, right?
Correct.
Now, we generally jump into mobile next, and you're running Windows Mobile, and we'll be talking a little bit more about that. But there's an update now, right?
There is. This came out last week, another update to Windows 10 Mobile Insider Preview, build number 10586.71 for all you Fast Ring members. And actually, I think since this came out, they might have even released it to Slow Ring members at this point. And this was a pretty nice update. Like, there aren't a lot of new features, but it definitely seemed to make things more stable. I have less things crashing. It did fix some issues that I had been having with the Microsoft band. You know, little things like not being able to use my Microsoft band to reply to text messages at all, period. It just didn't work. This update fixed that. Now, unfortunately, it was literally one day after this came out, they released an update to the Microsoft Health app, which is what the band uses. And at least for one of my coworkers, it completely broke everything with his Microsoft band, making it even less useful it was prior to this Fast Ring release.
Wow.
Now, fortunately, they released another update the next day, and he's got most of his functionality back. But he sent me a text message, and he's like, if you have auto updates turned on your phone, turn it off, because I just got an update to Microsoft Health, and it totally broke my band. It doesn't do anything. It doesn't sync at all.
Wow.
It's bad. So, yeah, he was so happy to have everything working, and then the very next day, everything stopped working.
Now, because I'm not running a device that gets these updates, I'm still a little bit confused about something. Is there not yet an actual production release of Windows 10 Mobile for existing phone devices yet?
Nope. There's no official production release yet. Despite releasing two new phones with Windows 10 on them, no, it has not been officially released yet.
Right.
They released phones with a pre-release version of an operating system.
Well, did they, or is it that making this work on the legacy devices is turning out to be a much bigger mess of weeds than they thought it'd be?
No, I mean, it's still not officially like the final version on the Lumia 950 and 950 XL either.
Wow.
It's not done. It's really not done. But we'll get into that in a little bit.
All right. Well, a Windows phone device caught my attention in the news. And what's interesting is the media spin on this, because everybody's asking the same question. Wait, why is there a new Windows phone device from someone other than Microsoft?
I don't think that's a great question, though, because there are other manufacturers that have been putting out new phones. There's a phone launching on T-Mobile this week that's Windows Phone, and it's not made by Microsoft. It's not good, and you shouldn't buy it, but it's happening. So I don't think it's the greatest question. I think there's a lot of other really interesting questions, like, wait, Vio is making a Windows phone?
Right. So we buried the lead here. It's a Vio Windows phone, and that's kind of surprising. Vio has been known for making some pretty cool hardware, some pretty decent hardware. And not surprisingly, the industrial design on this phone is really nice.
And when you say hardware, you mean laptops. They made awesome laptops.
Right. And you said made as in past tense, but they actually still make right. laptops.
That's true.
It's just that they're not part of Sony anymore.
Right. Yeah. They used to be Sony Vio laptops. Now they're just Vio laptops because Sony sold off that part of their company and that company kept the name. So yeah, good looking phone.
Yeah, it's really nice. It's, you know, it's decent specs. It's 5.5 inch screen, 13 megapixel camera, Snapdragon 617 with 3 gig of RAM. That's nice. So it supports Continuum. It's 16 gig of onboard storage with micro SD to bump that up. And it's not going to be available in the US.
Nope. But maybe that's not completely surprising, because does Vio sell their laptops in the US anymore?
Well, that's what's interesting. I'm not entirely sure that they do still serve the US market, or if they do, it's a very small piece for them. So this is going to be available in Japan in April, unlocked for about $424. So, you know, not terrible pricing for this. And obviously that's based on current conversion rates and stuff like that. I guess the thing that, I mean, I would ask the question, why would a company that hasn't made Windows phones start to get into what is clearly an underdog and what many press organizations have kind of declared as dead? Ah, Josh, it's been so long. We haven't even talked about that, because that happened right after the last episode that we did.
Yeah.
Where earnings from Microsoft came out and they said that their share of phone, their share of the phone market has gone down. And a lot of press organizations, I mean, a lot of the press responded to that saying, yep, Windows Phone is dead. It's official. Well, it's not official. So everybody calm down, because Microsoft didn't say that. In fact, they did say that they're continuing to support this market. So what it does mean, though, is that, you know, this is not really working the way anybody hoped it would, and it probably won't. This probably is not going to get resuscitated to a point that it's a real contender, like for a number two position ever.
Yeah. You know, and there's people, you know, I think about our friend Database Jace, Jason Combs from the Digital Lifestyle, who's constantly banging on the drum that, you know, it's Windows Phone is doing really poorly in the US, but it's not doing that bad in certain European countries and other markets. And that's true, but if it's not doing well here, that's a huge, huge, huge concern for this American company whose biggest market is America to have their phone not be doing well. Now, like you said, it isn't the official death of Windows Mobile. Microsoft hasn't said they're killing it. They've released a version of Windows 10 Mobile that week. So it's obviously not actually dead, but it really doesn't look good. I mean, would anyone say that Windows Phone is thriving as opposed to dying?
Right. And I guess more importantly, to expand that market, they need people to come to Windows Phone. And at this point in time, do you feel like they're positioning themselves in a way that they'll really attract new customers to Windows 10 Mobile? Sadly, I don't think that's going to happen.
Well, their last hope really is Continuum and the new universal Windows app platform. That their hope is that now that it truly is universal and that Windows 10 on PCs is so popular, that it will finally encourage all of these app makers to make universal apps that work on the desktop and on Windows Phone, and that will solve their problems.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not super convinced of that. I'm not sure how many people are. And you know, I love Windows Phone, people. I've been using nothing but Windows Phone for, I don't know, 4 years, 5 years? Been a while since... Right. Whenever I got that Samsung Focus, that was Windows Phone 7. So it's been a while. I'm a fan of Windows Phone here, people. I'm not a hater, but it isn't looking good right now. I'm not going to go the route of all of these other people and say it's dead, but it's not looking good. And like you said, it does make you question why companies like Vio are putting out new devices.
Right, right. I like the comment in our chat. It says, it's not dead, but it's on life support with a signed DNR.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you have been, I don't know, maybe in this case, the right word is eulogizing Windows Phone as a platform for you, potentially.
Yeah, for me personally, I'm getting really, really frustrated by Windows 10 Mobile. And anyone who follows me on Twitter, especially if you're watching my tweets on Saturday, knows just how bad it's getting for me already. But you know, I switched to Windows 10 Mobile on my Lumia 1520 last fall sometime. I don't remember exactly when it was, maybe late summer, early fall time frame. And it works. It's not like the phone reboots itself all the time or anything like that, although does occasionally randomly
reboot. It was
reboot.
For a while.
Yeah, I mean, it was for a while, but lately it doesn't randomly reboot very often. You know, maybe it's once or twice a week, I guess. It's not horribly bothersome that way. But there are a lot of other things that are really, really bothersome. I use Bluetooth a lot, a lot. I've got my Microsoft Band. It's Bluetooth. I've got Bluetooth headphones that I use all the time, every day, all day, to listen to podcasts. And Bluetooth is super, super broken in Windows 10 Mobile. And it got a little bit better with that last release, but my headset basically doesn't work for making phone calls right now. I was driving home, listening to a podcast via my headset, got a phone call, pushed the button to answer the call on my headset. It answered the call, but then my phone switched to saying that it was on speaker mode, and the person who was talking to me was coming out of the phone as if it was on speaker, not through my headset. And to make matters worse, it was one of those situations where the phone was pointing at the headset and saying, "Hey, it's your job to do this." And the headset was saying, "No, phone, it's your job to do this." And basically, neither of them worked, and the person who called me couldn't hear me at all. So I had to turn off, they eventually hung up on me, of course, and I had to turn off my headset real quick before they called back so that I would be able to, you know, talk to them on the phone. Like, this should work, and it doesn't. Right. There's another thing that's really simple and should work. Snoozing calendar reminders. Most of my appointments are set up with 15-minute reminders. It comes in. A lot of times I like to snooze it for 5 or 10 minutes. Oh, wait, they got rid of the 10-minute option. It's no longer there. I guess I'll snooze it twice for 5 minutes. Click 5 minutes, click snooze, never comes back. It will never, ever, ever come back.
Wow.
That's completely broken. Like, calendars were one of the main reasons I ever got into PDAs and smartphones. I have a terrible memory. I need right. to be reminded of things.
Right.
I yep. need snooze to work, and it doesn't. How is snooze broken on a smartphone in 2016? But it wow. is. And it's not just me, guys. I know some of you aren't having this problem. I have a coworker who sits 6 feet away from me, and his Lumia 950 XL is doing the same thing. It's not just me. Messaging, you know, the app that you use for text messaging. yeah. You get a text message in, maybe you don't see it right away. So you go to your notifications window, tap on that particular person's message, and it should take you straight to them. Yeah, a lot of times when I do that, it just says resuming forever and then crashes. Like, come on, really? Messaging is crashing? Edge, the web browser, still has lots of issues, still has lots of missing features. You get too many tabs open, things just stop working. You'll click a link in another app, it'll open up Edge, doesn't open up the page that you clicked a link for. It just doesn't work. So you have to go in, close all the tabs, go back to your thing, click the link again, then maybe it'll load. Maybe. Taking pictures. Another thing I do a lot with my phone. It's horribly slow now. It'll take the picture, but then let's say you want to text it to somebody right away or something like that. You'll go to the picture and there's a message on there that says something like, we're finishing up, I don't know, processing. I ought to know what it says because I see it all the friggin' time, but it's some message about it needing a little bit more time to finish processing the image. Dude, this is a Lumia 1520. This isn't a slow phone. Why is this taking like 30 seconds to process an image? It's ridiculous. So to answer the question that I'm sure everyone's going to ask, yes, I did a hard reset on my phone. I did this just a couple of weeks ago, maybe 1 week ago, to try to alleviate some of these problems, because that's what a lot of people said. Do the upgrade to Windows 10, then do a hard reset. Everything's a lot better that way. Okay, guys. I did that. It's still not better. Podcast apps crash all the time. I think it's because of the Bluetooth problems. I don't really know, but it's super frustrating. And as I was thinking about this, I thought, you know, didn't Microsoft lay off a whole bunch of QA folks back in 2014? Oh. And I went back and looked. Yes, they yeah. did.
Yes, they did.
They laid off thousands of QA people and then started these insider programs.
But we don't know what line those were in, right? I mean, we don't necessarily know where they came from, what group they were out of.
We know that they were in the Windows group.
Really?
And now that Windows is all one thing, they're theoretically people that would be testing some of this stuff instead of just, yeah. I mean, it really seems like they're just depending on insiders at this point. I'm sure that they're not. I'm sure they still have some QA people, but how in the world do we go 6 months with snoozing of calendar appointments being broken on a phone if they actually have QA people testing this stuff?
Right. Right. Well, so, I mean, the first question that I want to ask is, do you maybe just have beta fatigue? I mean, should you go back to the working version that you know is going to give you the device experience that you expect and wait for a production build, or at least crank down the ring that you're in? Didn't you say you're in the fast ring?
Well, I am in the fast ring, but I'm in the fast ring hoping that they're going to release fixes to these problems and I'll get them faster that way.
Well, but it sounds like what's really happening is that the fast ring is far less stable as opposed to getting stuff done faster.
Well, I don't know that it's any less stable than the slow ring of Windows 10. I think these are just problems with Windows 10 because eventually those fast ring builds become slow ring builds. And I think that this most recent fast ring update is already the most recent slow ring update. So I would be hosed either way. But the idea of going back to Windows Phone 8.1, I'm considering it. Like, I've been trying to stay on Windows 10 because I want to be able to report on how well this is working to our listeners, but it's driving me insane.
Right. Well, and because it's your daily driver, maybe you should just kind of give that aspect of it up. We report on news that's available and problems and trends that we're hearing, and you have a real phone that doesn't want to make you jump off the Windows 10 mobile cliff.
Which it really does. Like, I've spent a lot of time on Twitter and in real life talking with people about maybe I need to switch to Android at this point. And if I were to do that, what would be the phone that I would want? And I had a lot of conversations over the last few days with people about that. And it's not the conversations I want to be having, but with the state of Windows 10 being so horribly broken, the continually declining market share percentage, this doesn't feel like an operating system that is going to be around that much longer. So it seems like even if I do switch back to 8.1, it still isn't going to be a waste of my time to be investigating other platforms. And that makes me really, really sad. But
yeah,
that's what it feels like at this point.
Yeah. I want to remind you that right before the, I'll call it gold build of 8.1 mobile came out, or Windows Phone 8.1, whatever we were calling that, you and I were both, for lack of a better term, marveling over how Microsoft felt that they were going to get out something stable in time, because it was still such a mess. And yet, when they did release to production, it was a lot better. So part of what I'm wondering is, are we somehow seeing the public builds of these on something of a runway further out from what they're actually working on? And we just don't have visibility into how things really are right now in the code base.
I think that's definitely part of it, especially going back to that conversation that you referenced there. But, you know, that's, thinking back to that is actually what caused me to think about Microsoft firing all those QA people, because I thought back that, you know, Windows 10 on the PC isn't perfect either. And you know what I almost never had issues with? Windows 8 or 8.1 on anything. They were always rock solid on my surfaces, my desktop PCs, my laptops, my phones. It worked really, really well. Now, I've always been disappointed by them continually removing features from Windows Phone 8.1 that were, you know, cornerstones of the OS back when it launched with Windows Phone 7 and stuff. But in terms of stability and things like that, it was great. And man, ever since they've been moved to 10, it seems like things have been going downhill and getting worse and worse and worse, especially on the Windows Phone side. And that's what made me think, you know, it's almost like they don't have enough QA people, and maybe they don't because they've fired all of them.
Right. Oh, well. You know what I like, Josh?
What do you like?
I like a good Josh rant once in a while.
Well, I'm glad I could serve you in that way.
All right. Well, you're going to keep us apprised on your research and decisions, right?
Yep, absolutely.
Okay. Well, we're going to jump right into what's going on in our entertainment centers. And people may remember that I spent some time 2 weeks ago overhauling my media center PC. You know what's still happening? I'm still getting out of memory errors.
Oh my
all
gosh.
The time. Nearly every day that I turn my media center on, which granted isn't every day, but maybe every other day, I'm greeted by a media center has been closed, you're running low on memory, click to restart, error message.
Have you done any sort of Googling on this or anything?
A little bit, and I haven't found anything definitive yet. One thing that I noticed this evening is that, and I should have known, the iCloud plugin for Windows, which allows you to connect your iCloud account to different things in your Windows account, like your calendar and and what I want it for is my photos in Media Center,
mm-hmm.
is hogging memory compared to other running activities. It's taking like 250 meg of memory.
But even that's not that much.
That's not, but that's more than anything else that's running at the time, basically. Mm. So I don't know. I need to look into what's going on. I don't really understand it. I hope that if we have some listeners that have experienced this, that they have figured it out. And I know Droshna in the chat is laughing at me, and I deserve it. I absolutely deserve it. But yeah, so that's kind of frustrating me. And then as I've been continuing to back up my disk library, I got to a point where there was an HD DVD in my disk library that I wanted to back up. And I said, all right, let's try it. Let's see what happens. So my movies backed it up just fine, added it to the movie library, can't play it. So you may remember when Total Media Theater 6 came out and no longer publicly stated that it was capable of playing HD DVD content as a part of its specifications. We wondered, huh, what if they dropped that? I think they dropped it. I think my HD DVDs are basically big coasters with a hole in the middle now.
Huh. Well, I mean, isn't that what most people's HD DVDs turned into?
Well, they are, but at least I could play the media from them when I still was using Total Media Theater 5. So if Total Media Theater 6 eliminated that capability, then they're really no good to me at all. I might as well just throw them out or recycle them. Now, the good news is that most of them, because many studios were hedging, because remember, when HD DVD was out, so was Blu-ray, so nobody quite knew who was going to take over, and nobody predicted that Sony was going to bribe the most people. Oh, I mean, sorry, make it financially beneficial for the most number of companies to join their camp. So a lot of manufacturers of HDVDs, way before it was a thing, were putting DVD on one side, HD DVD on the other.
Mm.
And so I do have working DVD versions of a lot of the movies that I bought in HD DVD. And I did that very strategically. I tried to make sure that when I was buying movies that I had them in both format. Or this was also the time when companies were experimenting with giving you a digital copy through iTunes. So some of them actually have an iTunes copy associated with them. So they're not complete toast, but it's, you know, it's still frustrating because it's the end of a format completely that died, granted, 10 years ago. But nonetheless, it's the end of the content of a format for me. So, bummer. All right. Meanwhile, let's see. On the media server side, I haven't really made any progress. I haven't done anything to build a new PC yet that is going to run Plex and run PlayOn and stuff like that. So I'll talk about that more in a later episode. Now on television, I haven't really watched a lot. And one of the reasons that last week was such a mess for me was that I was in a certification training course all week long. And to prepare for the exam, that also ate up my entire weekend. So I didn't really get much television time either. And I think the only thing that I really watched was the last week's episode of The X-Files, which by the time some people listen to this may even be 2 weeks ago, but episode 3 of The X-Files, I'm still like, eh, I'm still wondering if these are the stories that they're running. Why did they bother with this big, huge splash 6-episode event? Because it seems like they're wasting the opportunity, but I hold out hope that it will get better. And I finished
halfway through the series.
I know. And I finished season 2 of Transparent, which was really even more quirky and weird than last season, but thoroughly enjoyable and so, so well acted. Totally enjoyed that. So that's pretty much it for me this week.
Okay. Well, I'm kind of in the same boat as you in terms of TV, but I did get some gaming in. Especially, you know, we're 2 weeks out now. So I mentioned a little bit earlier, did play a lot of the Division beta the weekend that was open. I'm really, really liking this game. pretty much as much as I had hoped to like this game. Now, it's a beta, and of course, it's not the whole game. It's only a little bit of it. So there's still some questions. You know, it's basically an MMORPG, and so the question is, what happens when you've done all of the single player missions and have reached the top level? What's the end game look like? And we still don't really know. And so that is the really, really big question. You know, once you get through all that stuff, what's going to keep you playing? Because the Dark Zone aspect of this game is really interesting. And that is what I spent a lot of my time playing during the beta. But I don't think the mechanics of the Dark Zone are enough to make me want to play all the time, to make that be my go-to game for, I want to play some multiplayer game right now, I'll play that. Like, I'm not sure that would win me over from Call of Duty, at least not every time. It might some of the time. But, like, you know, if I've got two or three friends who all want to play The Division and go run around the Dark Zone, then cool. Because there are some really, really fun experiences. You know, the fact that, you know, you get some cool loot and you have to go through and get it extracted by a helicopter leads to some really fun, tense situations where you're just like running from people because they all know you have cool stuff, and like trying to set up, you know, on rooftops to try and cover your escape. And like, I had a lot of really fun experiences like that, but it's not going to be like that every single time you play. So looking forward to hearing more about what is going to be that end game, but I've got this game pre-ordered and I still don't have any intention of canceling that pre-order. I think I'm still just going to get it the day it comes out and love it as much as I can. I also got to play another game. It's called Dirt Rally. This is the latest edition of games from the Dirt lineup. And this one was released on PC last year. It was actually released as an early access game, I think early last year, but then was officially released later in the year. And this is a much more simulation-focused rally racing game. You know, the Dirt games kind of started to go a little bit more arcadey and crazy and stuff. And this is rally, actual rally. Like, you better practice, you better be paying attention, or else you are going to flip your car off a cliff and there's going to be some serious consequences to that. There's no rewind. You know, they've had that in previous games where hold the Y button and it'll rewind 5 seconds so that you can undo that stupid mistake you just made. Nope, not there. You got to be good. You got to be paying attention and getting better and practicing. And I'm really liking it a lot. I say that because this game is coming out on Xbox One in April, I believe. So I have a friend who has this game. He let me play it because, you know, when it comes to racing games, I want to see if it's going to work on my PC because that's where I've got my racing wheel. So it's good. If you're into rally racing, you need to get Dirt Rally either now on PC or when it comes out on the Xbox One in a couple of months. It's really, really cool. Now, I went to play, it wasn't actually Dirt, it was Project Cars over the weekend. And I got like two laps into a practice session and my computer said, your processor is too hot. You need to stop doing what you're doing. For those of you who pay attention and know these types of things, it had gotten up to 93 degrees Celsius. That's where the warning trigger is on my Core i5 processor. And I basically just couldn't play this game. And I thought, all right, well, I really got to do something about this because it seems like the temperatures on this PC have been eking up and up and up over the last few months. I got to do something about it. So over the weekend, I pulled out a cooler that I had actually won at the Home Server Show meetup in 2014 that just coincidentally does work with my computer. But I had never really wanted to install it because I wasn't having heat problems and it looked like kind of a pain in the butt to install. And turns out it was. I had to remove the motherboard from the case install this thing. But it was absolutely worth it. So, like I said, it got up to 93 degrees while I was playing that game. And my, like, I'm just kind of doing stuff on the computer temperatures were hovering in the, like, 55-ish degree range. And like nights when I was podcasting, so I've got video stuff going on and audio recording and all the stuff going on, it was in the like 60s and 70s. Yeah, right now I'm at 28 degrees with this new cooler. And when, as soon as I got it installed, I went and fired up Project Cars again and did like twice as many laps as had caused it to overheat prior, quit out of the game, went to look at my temperatures, and it was at like 45 degrees.
Nice. So
made a huge world of difference for me. Now, I don't know how much of that was the cooler and how much of that was, it looks like I didn't really do a great job of installing the thermal paste when I originally built this computer, because it wasn't covering the whole processor. So this could entirely be my fault. But I'm not sure. So either way, I will have a link to the cooler. I don't know what it is off the top of my head for me to even tell you right now. I know it's a Cooler Master, but I don't remember which one. So I will put a link to that in the show notes for anyone who's interested. It's monstrous. It's really, really, really huge. So I wasn't sure if it was even going to fit in my case, but hey, it did the job really, really well. So that's gaming stuff. On to what I've been watching. Finally finished episodes 2 and 3 of Star Wars with Eden at home. So we had finally finished the original trilogy and all of the prequels. She liked episodes 2 and 3 a whole lot more than she liked episode 1. And in fact, she's gone back and watched episodes 2 and 3 again. I don't think she's ever going to go back and watch episode 1 again, as I think is the case with most people other than you, Richard.
I just don't hate it as much as everybody does.
It's just not a very good movie. It's boring. But anyway, so we finished episode 3, and she said, so can we go and see episode 7? And I said, I don't even know if it's still in the theater. But it was.
Of course it is.
So we went and we saw that together on Saturday, and she really liked it. Now, one thing that I discovered is kids are jerks, and I don't mean my kid. All the kids she goes to school with, like we're driving to the theater, and I'm not going to say any of these things, but she's like, oh, so I know this and this, and I know that this happens, and I'm like, your friends suck. They spoiled all of the major plot points for you already.
I don't think at that age that you really understand the concept of spoilers, that you have that filter to hold back on stuff like that.
Apparently not, because she knew all of the major details of the movie, which made me a little bit bummed for her. But she still really, really liked it.
Great.
As we were leaving, she talked about how maybe she'll go as a Star Wars character for Halloween this coming year. And I thought, oh, she's going to want to go as Rey. That's cool. And she says, no, I want to go as either Luke or Leia. And I'm like, what? You just saw a movie about an awesome female character and you don't want to go as her? And her response was, well, Rey was kind of mean. She was only mean in one scene and it was justifiable. So I might need to work on her with that. But maybe not, because her other plan is to go as Abraham Lincoln for Halloween, and I think that's way awesome. So
of course you do.
Yeah, of course I do. So so there's that. And then on the TV front, seriously, I've watched no like regular TV. I haven't caught up on The Expanse yet, any of that stuff. What I've been trying to do is catch up on the Rolex 24 Hours of Daytona. It's the first big sports car race of the year. Now, I didn't record 24 hours of this race, but I probably did record 8 hours of this race. And so I've been trying to just watch it when I have time. But the problem is stupid copy protection.
Stupid copy protection.
It was, you know, it was on the Fox Sports channels. My cable provider copy protects everything on the Fox Sports channels, which means I can only watch it when I'm in the living room, which severely limits the amount of time that I can spend watching. Because if I could put it on my Surface or on my work computer, or and by work computer, I mean this one that I'm recording the podcast on.
Right.
I could be watching it while I'm doing other things. But no, I have to watch it on the stupid media center PC because it has to be copy protected.
Do you not have an Xbox 360 somewhere that you could use as an extender?
I do, but I don't. I mean, it just it doesn't really work for the way that I would want to do things. Because
okay.
the only thing I could really hook it up to is my computer monitor. And that would mean that I would have to just be watching that. And I really want to watch this race while I'm doing other things.
Makes sense.
So being able to watch it on my Surface would be ideal, or in a window on this computer. And I can't do either. Rennie, no, I completely missed the Bathurst 12 hours this year also, which is another race I love to see. Honestly, I didn't hear anything about it, but I missed that too. So, but that's a race that's a lot harder to see here in the US. It's just not nearly as popular here, even though it should be, because it's an awesome, awesome race. All right, well, that is it for what's been going on in my entertainment center. Also, so let's get the heck out of here. If you want to get a hold of us, there's a bunch of ways you can do that. We're on Twitter. Richard is at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard. And the website is at DigiMediaZone. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/theDMZ. We're on Google Plus. Just do a search for us, because that's how Google everything works. If you want to send us an email, that's entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. You should also check out Richard's other show, Home On. What's going on with Home On, Richard?
Yeah, you're probably asking that because what you probably really want to say is, why haven't you had an episode out, Richard? It's been more than 3 weeks, Richard, since the last episode.
I need my home automation fix.
I understand. I have an episode in the hopper with my dear friend Kathy Berry, and we talk about largely about the Echo and my experience using an Echo as a part of my smart home. So it's a pretty good episode. I think it was a lot of fun. She actually had certain things like the Nest thermostat and the Hue lighting system before I did.
What?
Like, she was into this stuff before I bought some of it. So it was a good conversation. I'm really glad that I got to talk with her. She'll be with me at South by Southwest this year, and we'll be at the Smart Home Mixer that Mike Wolf is hosting there. So if you're going to be at South by Southwest, you might want to find out more about that. We'll be there, and we'd love to talk to you. But it's going to be a good episode. I'm going to try and get it out this week. I'm having some major, major Skype issues and other issues with my computer. So the audio on this was really bad, and editing it has been just outrageously tedious. So I'm trying as fast as I can here.
Yikes. Yeah, well, hurry up, because I'm really curious about the Echo stuff. I was just having conversations with our friend Richard Green today about the Echo and Sonos and all that stuff. So,
oh yeah,
I'm very curious. All right, so if you like our podcast, then the best way that you can show us that you like it is to leave us some feedback on iTunes, or, you know, all the other places where you can find the show, like Stitcher Radio and TuneIn Radio, maybe eventually Google Play. I want to get to the point where I don't have to say eventually Google Play. Maybe they'll eventually actually release that. Don't know. But yeah, if you like the show, leave us a rating or a review on any of those places, but especially iTunes. It helps us out a lot, and we really appreciate it. And then if you're just looking for some absolutely as real time as it gets conversation with us, come back and listen to the show as we record it. Now, that's usually Tuesday nights at 8:30 p.m., That's not going to be the case next week. February is an insane month, and I apologize for that, guys. Next week, probably going to be recording Wednesday, February 17th. And I'm just going to say it now. The following week, there's not going to be a show. Richard's not available.
What? And
that's going to be my horrible, horrible week with work stuff. So unfortunately, there won't be an episode the week of the 22nd. Come back, listen to us live next week on the 17th around 8:30 p.m. Eastern. You can chat with us in the chat room while we're recording this, which is always a lot of fun for us. And hopefully we'll see you then. So that's going to do it for episode 357. I'm Josh Pollard. He's Richard Gunther. And we'll be back next time for episode 358. Until then, adios.
Goodbye.